Asoikos. United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And this is the Friday lunch hour. We are marching towards the weekend and could not be more excited about it. And we're also very excited for our next guest, returning champion, State Senator Kelda Royes is here, and the last time we talked to you, you were the Joint Finance Committee was just kicking off the public hearings,
yes,
which looked like they were very well attended.
They were. We had like over 1,400 people testify in person,
wow,
and hundreds more who wanted to, but just there weren't enough slots for them.
Time, yeah.
And then, you know, Democrats held several other additional listening sessions around the state. We've had thousands of email comments. People are excited about this budget and wanted to have their say.
So what were the themes, would you say, that came out of the four sessions and the emails and the additional sessions?
Yeah, the themes were definitely people loved what the governor was doing in the budget. K-12 public education was the number one issue by far that people said, hey, finally we've got a surplus. It is past time to fund our schools. Childcare is a huge issue, not just for parents, but for employers. We heard from so many business owners that one of their big workforce challenges is childcare.
Yep.
You know, obviously people are concerned about local government funding, shared revenue. People care about the environment and clean water, all sorts of issues, transportation and transit, housing. But those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones. So then when you guys finish one of your public hearings, how much debrief is there between the Joint Finance Committee? Like, how much do you guys actually discuss or talk about what you heard versus all, or do all of you kind of go back to your respective offices, either actually or metaphorically, because it seems like there's a gap between what you just said that was talked about and brought up in public hearing and at least what's been taken out as of this week from,
yes,
what was in the governor's budget and what is now not, maybe
gone,
not going to be, he's gone.
Yeah, it's
and
gone.
A lot of it seems like things that people said they wanted. And so, is that a fair assessment?
Very fair. Very, and you said it so politely, too.
Which is, you know.
I haven't always been as, you know, as politic about it. Yeah, I mean, it's very frustrating because people spend, they give a whole day of their time, mm-hmm, really. If you're going to come to the Joint Finance Committee, you got to drive somewhere, spend all day, wait, and then drive home. And then that input basically, there is no session where we sort of get together and talk about it, right? Of course, the Democratic members on Joint Finance, we do.
Yeah.
I try to talk to as many individual members as I can. My staff reaches out to staffers. But really, it's, you know, the Republicans are doing their own thing. We're not invited. and so it's really frustrating, but you see that outcome in what the committee did this week, which is basically they took some of the most popular items like paid family leave,
yep,
like Medicaid expansion, you know, having Badger Care cover more people, and they just threw it in the garbage, even though those were extremely popular items.
I mean, that was, we were talked about a little bit in the first hour, you know, Medicaid expansion, 70% popularity, paid leave, mm-hmm, 73%, lead pipe replacement, 74%. Marijuana legalization, 64%. I don't have the number ahead of me in front of me right now, but what is the, is, do you have any polling on childcare?
I don't.
Yeah.
We know that we have a lot of data from childcare centers and parents as to how many will close if we don't extend funding. But yeah, I mean, childcare is extremely popular, especially for anybody who has a child, knows a child, or expects that they'll be taken care of by somebody who is a child now in 20 years.
When all those things, the only one on that list that feels like it's maybe because of the amount of lead pipes that are in Milwaukee. But take that, the lead pipe replacement out. Those, all those other issues are not rural versus urban. Like, those are things that are happening all across the state. And thus why I think they have such high approval ratings as far as, like, yes, we would like to get something done here. And so it's wild to see. And I think that's the thing that is kind of the missing piece now is there a chance that just because they got taken out doesn't mean some other part of the budget that the Republicans come up with will address that issue, but it will just be in their language? Like, do you think that there's still stuff in any of these very popular problems that are happening, they just want it to be done in their way? Or do you think it just won't be addressed?
That is true for some issues, not the ones that we've mentioned.
Got it.
I mean, it's not like Republicans want to pass paid leave and just get credit for it. And so they took it out of the budget. I'm going to be authoring a standalone bill on paid family leave, as we have done in past sessions. So it's not like it disappears, but it's just not a part of the budget. And it's, that's a huge missed opportunity. And the Republicans will block it probably from even having a hearing as standalone legislation. So the issues on which there might be some compromise, those are mostly still in the budget. Although there are a few that I think, maybe some housing things that Republicans are going to want to do outside of the budget process.
And so we're talking to State Senator Kelly Royce about where we're at with the budget, because she sits on the Joint Finance Committee, and she may not know everything because sometimes things happen in silos, but she knows a lot more than us because you're there. But I guess that's actually interesting what you just said. What are the pros and cons for any of these issues as far as being baked into a budget every 2 years versus being standalone bills?
Well, I think the first is the ease of passage, right? We have a almost super majority Republican legislature in both houses that's very gerrymandered. And so those Republicans are responsive to their constituents, which are the most extreme elements of the Republican Party. And we've seen this nationally too, right? Republicans are responsive to the most extreme parts of their base because they don't have, broadly moderate or progressive voters in their district that they need to worry about. And so when you put something in a budget, it makes it easier, for those members to sort of swallow something that they might not love and have it pass. And it also means that then you're planning in a comprehensive way. Governor Evers built this budget to help Wisconsin grow, to make it a place where families can grow and learn and work and thrive. And when you start taking pieces of it out, there goes transit, there goes affordable housing, there goes clean water, there goes, extra special ed funding. You're dismantling this big cohesive thing that kind of where everything builds off itself.
Yeah.
And it also means that the governor won't have as extensive a veto power. The governor can line item veto the budget. So he can say yes to this appropriation and no to that. And so the Republicans really want to force his hand and use some of these things that we know need to pass, like shared revenue. We have to have more money going to local governments all across the state. But if they can sort of game the system and pack that shared revenue needed bill with a bunch of poison pill unpopular ideas that could never pass in the legislature and would never become law, they're going to try to take advantage of that. So they're really trying to game the system in a cynical way. And it's bad for Wisconsin, and it's kind of emblematic of what we've seen the Republican Party doing nationally and here in Wisconsin.
Well, and that's basically what you just described is what is potentially unfolding right now as far as the shared revenue bill came out.
Right.
And it's a separate, it's where that was one of the items that was in Governor Evers' budget, got taken out to be a separate bill. We finally saw it this week after they had their press conference last week about it, where there wasn't actually anything to look at. And then while we were on air yesterday, I think Governor Evers said, I will veto this. Like, this doesn't go far enough. And it really puts basically everyone in between a rock and a hard place of cities. Everyone, all of our local municipalities need more money. But that was, like you said, like, was it just poison pills as far as, like, that was what they were trying to do in the first place?
Right. The Republicans want to press every advantage that they have, and they don't care how reckless it is fiscally. In Washington, D.C., they are willing to potentially crash the global economy just to make a point about the debt that their president ran up, right? And here in Wisconsin, Republicans manufactured a crisis over the last 10 years and even decades longer than that, that have starved our local governments of the resources that they need. And now it's come to a head. They know they have to do something. So what they've proposed is not enough funding. And with all of these terrible strings attached that are really reckless, both fiscally and in terms of policy, and they're deeply unpopular. And they just don't seem to care who they're going to hurt in the process of these very political moves.
So frustrating.
Senator Royce,
I don't know how you go to work every day.
Senator Royce, I'm just thinking, working on a craft project for the next time the Joint Finance Committee does go out into Wisconsin and has constituents come forward who spend all day traveling to be there. For the ones who don't respond to their constituents or the needs of their constituents, I'm going to make out a cardboard cutout of each of them, and they can go to those meetings because they'll be just as responsive as the humans.
You know, I think part of the frustration is that gerrymandering really destroys your ability to be an individual legislator, to buck the party leadership. You know, Robin Voss basically sets the agenda, and all the other Republicans just have to go running after him. You know, and there's a huge amount of conflict between Senate Republicans and Assembly Republicans. It's a little in the weeds, but I feel like your listeners might appreciate kind of knowing what's going on behind the scenes. And so there's a big power struggle, right, between, you know, the Senate Republicans. They kind of want to be the adults in the room. And then, you know, Robin Voss, who's managing this ridiculous caucus, and anybody who's a reasonable person in that caucus basically has to be quiet or they've got to retire.
Yeah.
Heavy sigh.
Heavy sigh. All right. Well, we still want to talk about, when we come back, I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about why, from what you've been able to gather, why there is so much hesitation, or not even hesitation, just outright denial of expanding Medicaid. We're one of 10 states now that still hasn't done it. North Carolina has just beaten us to it. And then I also want to talk about child care and what we can actually get done as far as solutions, people you've talked to, businesses you've talked to, because that's not going to be a pending thing. Apparently, I'm late. I should have already signed up on daycare waitlist.
Oh, yeah. God. Yep, I got on my waiting list even before I got married.
Okay. Thanks. All right. We'll be right back. Keller Royce will still be here when we return.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Make suppers go around, suppers go around, suppers go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Metnair, and we are talking to State Senator Kelda Royce about money and the budget and where we're at as far as what we could actually get out of the Republicans that hopefully will be some of the issues that are so popular will be addressed, but maybe we shouldn't hold our breath. And one of those is definitely Medicaid and expanding Medicaid, because we are one of the last states that still refuses to do it despite how popular it is. And I guess, do you have any insight on why this just can never get any support from the Republicans?
I mean, you know, as always, the answer is gerrymandering and Robin Voss.
Yes.
I mean, it's not based in reason. It's not based in fiscal, you know, sound policy. You know, even if you sort of assume, okay, the Republican politicians, they don't care about 90,000 people having health care. They don't care about the 50,000 people that might lose Medicaid coverage because of the winding down of the pandemic emergency coverage. But, you know, when you look at the workforce shortage in our state, we have to expand voucher care. Mm-hmm. We have people all over the state that cannot afford to take an extra shift. They can't afford to pick up another shift because if they do, they'll go over the income requirements and they'll lose their health insurance.
Yep.
Same thing with raises. We have people that are trying, you know, to keep their head above water. If they take a dollar or two an hour raise, they have to say no to it. They can't become an assistant manager because they will lose their Medicaid. Republicans have taken basically an anti-growth stance, an anti-self-sufficiency stance by not expanding Badger Care in our state. So it's not even that it's popular. It's just that what they're doing is, once again, fiscally so reckless. And of course, it costs our state taxpayers billions more to not take the federal expansion.
Because we're not getting the billion, like the money that we could be getting from the federal government if we were to expand it, right?
Yes, and also because state taxpayers then have to backfill money that would otherwise be covered by the federal government for people who are already covered. I mean, so it's not just that we're not getting the extra money. We also have to pay more money to cover the existing insured population.
And not only is it counterproductive, Senator Royce, but you're trapping these people.
Yeah.
They're right. Stuck, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, we heard from people and they're like, you know, I'm working so hard. I just want to like be able to get another job so that I can, you know, get my own apartment and move into my own place or, you know, but I can't afford childcare. And if I do this, then I will lose my health insurance coverage. And people shouldn't be, you know, making decisions to hold themselves back in life because they don't have access to healthcare.
And then, you know, and I've heard this from different people who are small businesses who don't. They can't afford to offer health insurance because of the size of their company and it's not profitable for them. But then they their labor shortage, they can't promote people from within. And there's like, it's so complicated and it's so together and it seems also complicated, but also obvious. And yet here we are.
Yes.
And the other side of that, I would say, as I think we were cutting to a commercial. You got on the daycare list before you were married?
Yeah, I had a staffer and he said, you know, I was just selected to the assembly. He's like, I don't know anything about your personal life, but if you're thinking about ever having a baby, you better get on a waiting list. And I did. And thankfully, that's why I had infant care when my daughter was finally born
later. I'm late to the game because we're not on a waiting list yet.
Yeah, but just bring the baby to the Capitol and I'll play.
Perfect. Perfect. So obviously now childcare is an issue for a lot of people. It will soon be an issue for me. And so what are you hearing as far as, I don't know, potential, because it probably is not, I would guess, if I was a betting person, will not be part of the budget. But as far as bills that are being discussed or could be introduced that are creative solutions where, you know, everybody wins, where the employers win, employees win, it gets people who want to be working a bit like their ability to get back to work. What are you hearing as far as what a solution could look like?
Well, I think the solution is actually surprisingly simple. We have a federal program that called Child Care Counts that stepped in to basically save the child care industry during COVID. And without it, we would have seen even more mass closures. We already lost about a quarter of our child care slots during that COVID period. And what we're seeing is if Child Care Counts is not reauthorized, if the state doesn't make the $300 million investment, which is tiny compared to the economic activity it unleashes for workers and employers, if that doesn't happen, we're already starting to see childcare centers saying, we're going to be closing. We can't survive without these funds. We can't, you know, if we cut the rates for our workers who are already making, you know, $10, $12 an hour, they're going to leave and we're going to have to close classrooms. Parents are already paying more than they can. If we charge them more, they can't pay, they're going to have to take their kid out. So we will see mass closures of daycare centers and loss of childcare slots in every part of the state if we don't invest this $300 million.
And so the $300 million, and so that is something that, just to clarify, that's something that could be in the budget, or is it that's a separate bill?
It is in the budget.
Okay.
Governor Evers put it in. Republicans zeroed it out, but they didn't basically take it out of consideration. So
It
is something that we will be discussing when we get to the budget for the Department of Children and Families. And I will not stop beating this drum. This is the hill I'm going to die on, because we cannot have a functioning economy if we don't have childcare. It is infrastructure. It is roads and bridges. We need it just as much as we need anything else to make our economy function.
And so basically, just to reiterate the importance of what you just said. So if we don't invest in this, in the $300 million, it's not that we can't expand childcare. It's that we will have even the limited amount of childcare we have today will go down because child care centers will have to close.
Right. We could lose like a quarter of the slots that we have right now. And we're already down. I mean, there are people who have money and they're willing to pay $2,000 a month for infant care. And there are no slots. There's no place for them to go. You know, and those are people that could be in the workforce and want to be in the workforce.
Deep sigh.
I know.
Second heavy sigh of the show.
And they wonder, hey, why aren't more people coming to Wisconsin? Why are all the young people leaving our state? I don't know. Because every other state is like doing things to try to make it more attractive for young people.
I know.
And Robin Voss doesn't care about that.
All right. Well, hopefully next time you come back on, State Senator Keller Royce, it'll be for good news. But thank you, as always, for joining us. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the sunshine. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you so much. All right. When we come back, Tracy Johnson, CEO of CARW, will be here to talk about Homebrew Coalition. Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are joined by Tracy Johnson, who is the president and CEO of the Commercial Association of Realtors Wisconsin, also known as CARW. And we're so happy to have you here.
It's great to be here. Waukesha is such a beautiful little town. I love
it. Isn't it so cute down here? You know, I had not spent, and since we started the show last July, I had not really spent much time in downtown Waukesha, and now that we get to come here every day, they've done a really good job with their downtown, and so it's fun to be on Main Street and go to Steaming Cup and get some coffee.
Mountaintop Coffee is another great place.
Yes, exactly. And so, but we're so excited to have you here, and so I feel like I didn't realize that you were a part of, it was the end of March when the Home Crew Coalition was announced.
Yes.
And so, tell us first what that is.
Well, the Home Crew Coalition is really kind of a group of business leaders who are, you know, span the political spectrum, bipartisan in nature. And we're really advocating for a solution to help make sure that the brewers stay here in Milwaukee. And we can fill basically a funding gap for maintenance on the facility. And so that is the obligation that we have as a city and a state, and we're just trying to help navigate a system to ensure that happens.
And so why was it important for you to, like, why did you want to be on that coalition?
Sure. Well, as the Commercial Association of Realtors is a group of commercial real estate professionals, and we engage not only in issues that promote regulatory reform, economic development, but projects that are really important to the economic vitality of the region and of the state. Mm-hmm. And so this is a huge one. I'm not sure if everyone realizes the economic impact that the stadium has.
I don't even know if I feel like it comes down, whenever the talks of stadiums happen, whether it's the Brewers, whether it's Fiserv, there's this conversation around, you know, very rich owners.
Okay.
And how much the public pays for it, and like the debate that happens of like who's responsible for this, but simultaneously how much economic value having, especially in a, you know, what we're always called as Wisconsin is a small market compared to other states who have professional sports team, especially a football, an NFL, NBA, and MLB team. Like, as a 6 million person state, like, that's a lot of professional sports that we're really lucky to have, and we love our sports. But it's also, you know, basically the sales tax for the new stadium for what was Miller Park finally was over, and now one of the solutions that's on the table is bring it back. And so I guess, like, as you guys navigate, obviously you are a team, like, we need to keep the Brewers here and figure out how to make that work. What are kind of the conversations that you have to navigate as far as all the different stakeholders who are involved?
Yeah, well, and that's a great question. And going back to one of the comments that you made earlier about, you know, these stadiums and these arenas, I was involved very heavily on the Fiserv Forum and the Bucks development. And this is not the same project, obviously, because we have an existing facility with American Family Field. But you kind of go back and say, imagine a world without it. Okay. If the Bucks left, think about all of the economic impact that we wouldn't realize, whether it was tourism revenue, whether it was the, you know, the revenue, the unrecognized value of having the national spotlight, or the income tax revenue. That was a big piece of what we were talking about with the Pfizer form and the Bucks. Same thing with the Brewers. Since 2001, American Family Field has generated around $2.5 billion in statewide economic output. And, you know, what that really is the, you know, the income tax, and mm-hmm. that benefits all of us. And, you know, when you compare the two, Pfizer Forum and the Brewer Stadium, you know, Pfizer Forum is around, 17,000 seats, yeah. right? The Brewer Stadium's almost 50,000, and they have so many more games. I mean, this is a big deal. And yeah. so when it goes to navigating those conversations, obviously the first play was to see if we could get that in the budget, and that was summarily dismissed. That is not happening.
That is not happening.
And, you know, I understand. But here's the deal. It is going to be a battle that will not be won with one fight. It's going to take multiple times. And I just had a conversation with leadership this morning, and they're optimistic that this will get done because of the statewide economic impact. Listen, it's the Milwaukee Brewers, but this is our Milwaukee Brewers. It's our state's baseball team. And I think it's very relatable for even folks outstate who realize the economic impact.
I mean, we've felt that because we have Brewers tickets that we give away throughout the Civic Media stations. And we've had people call and win tickets who are certainly going to drive 1, 2, 3 hours to go to a game. And so it's I think that is absolutely true as far as across the state, mm-hmm. people being Brewers fans and are excited for the opportunity when they can have the time to actually make it down for a game. So I would absolutely say that's true. That's not just a Southeast Wisconsin, it's like how the Packers are.
Yeah. And even in talking to the legislators, there isn't a ton of, I don't want to say this is going to be easy. This is nothing worth fighting for is easy. I think you just continue to have to make the case. You got to focus on not only the economic impact through the income tax, but all of the jobs that are created as a result of the concessions. Think about the union jobs mm-hmm. in improving the stadium. I mean, this is going to have a huge economic impact. And again, imagine a world without the Brewers. What does that stadium look like when nobody's in it?
But Tracy, I think maybe some of the hesitation on the part of some of the public is, when is that going to be decrepit? Is that going to be, it's a useless stadium in 15 years. We need a brand new one.
Yeah, I mean, I think continuing to maintain the asset that we've already invested so much in is really kind of that argument, and making sure it doesn't get to that point. I mean, you think about some of the deferred maintenance issues that we have mm-hmm. with Milwaukee County, and it's a result of, you know, the prioritization that has taken places over administrations. And with an entity like American Family Field, I think they just want to make sure that it doesn't get to that point.
Get beyond repair.
Well, and it was a part of the original deal. And I think that legislators and decision makers do have some leverage because they're trying to tie, you know, an extended lease of the Brewers are leasing that stadium and trying to ensure that they continue to stay here so that we don't have to go back to the table again in any time soon.
Is that, and I'm sure because between being part of the Pfizer deal, now mm-hmm. being involved in this, and I'm assuming in general you've researched a lot of how different cities mm-hmm. navigate these conversations and negotiations. What is the kind of pros and cons between when a franchise owns the stadium versus the county, community, what, you know, et cetera, owning the stadium and then leasing it like we do with the Brewers?
You know, my expertise extends only to that kind of private-public partnership, which I think is the best model because of the benefit that the public realizes from having an asset like that. You know, there were TIF conversations, tax increment finance conversations around the Pfizer Forum. You know, all of those things, you have to continue to make the case to the taxpayers. And I think that's actually creates a better outcome mm-hmm. when you have to make those kinds of arguments and decisions and make the case.
We are talking to Tracy Johnson, who is the president and CEO of CARW, Commercial Association of Realtors of Wisconsin. And so moving on from the Bucks, unless there's anything else you want to add.
No. Budenholzer. Are we going to talk? No, we don't have to talk about that.
Wait, which one? We did talk a little bit about Bud. Do you have immediate reactions about Bud?
Well, I do, actually. And actually, when we were working on the Bucks arena, we worked with Jason Kidd. And when he was let go, that was like, oh, my gosh, he was the guy who got us here.
Yeah.
And then I knew Coach Bud just from just different engagements and things like that. I actually got to golf with him one time.
Is he a good golfer?
He is an amazing golfer.
Really? Are you a good golfer? Toot your own horn.
Sometimes.
Come on.
Okay. Sometimes I'm an okay golfer. But he was just a great, great guy. And I think he'll be missed. But, you know, business is business. And sometimes it's not pretty. So.
Yeah. Anyway. That's kind of how it was. It was one of those things where I feel like whenever these public, you're in a very public position, everyone has an opinion on how you're doing. And then they're not privy at all to the conversations that are happening behind the scenes. And so I was joking because I felt like after they lost game five, the Twitter outrage was everyone was calling for his head. And then yesterday, everyone was like posting like these nice pictures with him. It's like, oh, thanks, Bud, for the memories. And I was like, that was a quick turn.
No, I agree. I almost posted a picture, but then I was like, oh, I don't know.
It is nice to know, though, that he's a nice man.
Oh, he was so nice. And sometimes when I would watch him on the sidelines, I'm like, you should be more excited. Like, you should be more. And he was just very calm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember when he got his car stolen because he, like, left the keys in it or something? I mean, he was
such a nice.
He was, like, so laid back. I enjoyed him. But you know what? You gotta cut the cord.
Business is business.
Business is business, yes.
So speaking of business being business, I know that you, obviously, commercial real estate. And so part of that is the conversation around working from home, working at the offices. There's obviously over the last, since I've moved to Milwaukee, I feel like Northwestern, like moving back one of their campuses to downtown Milwaukee, Milwaukee Tool. And so the push that seems like there's more companies who are building or at least moving part of their workforce back to downtown Milwaukee. Does that mean more people are going back to work in the office?
Well, it's interesting. The whole COVID, you know, the work from home is going to be an ongoing theme for when we talk about office
real
estate. Even
though it was today that they've basically announced that, like, it's over.
It's over. Pandemic's over, you guys.
Yeah.
Even though it still exists.
Yes. Yeah. I did drop. It's now the fourth leading cause of death.
Okay.
But it's dropped out of the top three.
Okay.
So whatever that's worth.
Progress.
Yeah. So when we talk about work from home, this has been a trend since before pandemic, since before 2020. And I think, you know, obviously we had, you know, 80% of the workforce not coming to the office during the pandemic. And then slowly and surely that's been working back up to around 60, 65% of folks are now saying that they're working in the office, and businesses are really making different decisions around their real estate assets. And they're really embracing more of that hybrid model and then making decisions to either contract their real estate footprints or, you know, change out some of the layouts of the offices. But at the end of the day, you know, people are starting to make decisions. And that's really what we needed to see from the market to give some certainty, especially in the office space, which has been the one that people have questioned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, frankly, that's the one that we're going to see the most volatility when it comes to financing and concerns with the banks. A lot of refinancing of office assets, I think, are going to cause some heartburn for some communities. But at the end of the day, we've seen a lot of buildings go to adaptive reuse. So for example, you've got 100 East, which is on Water in Wisconsin. That's an office building that was about 30 to 40% occupied. Those tenants are being told this is no longer office space. They're going to go out to the market and hopefully, you know, absorb some other vacant spaces. And then that building will be converted to apartments, market-rate apartments, and then some retail. And so I think you're going to continue to see more of that, especially as those, you know, refinancing timelines start to come to fruition.
And that's what's been interesting. Every once in a while, I'll see an article of different historic buildings, at least in downtown Milwaukee, that is being converted into apartments, which I think, do you think that is still good as far as like the vibrancy of a downtown? And there's that, if it's residential, it still bodies on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think the more density you have in a downtown or in any area, the more activity that you'll have for an office user or retail. I was talking to a property manager of an office building downtown, and I said, what's the mood? And what are you hearing? And they said, and she said, you know, there's a lot of demand for retail in our office buildings. So a lot of office buildings have, you know, 14 floors of office, and then first floor would be a restaurant or a dry cleaner or something like that. You don't have the density and the activity the foot traffic to sustain that. And so, you know, how do you make that all work? And so that's one of the challenges that we'll be, you know, facing going forward.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Tracy Johnson will still be here when we come back from the break. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are joined by Tracy Johnson, who is the president and CEO of the Commercial Association of Realtors of Wisconsin. And we were talking about Home Crew Coalition and the Brewers. Yep. And we were talking about people going back to work. And now an interesting thing that you were telling me about was like retail stores and closures and the demand for property and stuff. So tell me more about that.
Well, retail is, so I work with three different asset types. We work with office brokers, industrial brokers, and retail brokers. And of those three different categories, the retail brokers are the most optimistic of all of them.
Which is interesting because I feel like that's backwards from what we think about like brick and mortar stores over the last 15, 20 years, closing and closing and closing because of Amazon and online and everything. But they're the most optimistic?
They are the most optimistic because there's so little availability. And what that means is not just availability, but quality availability.
Okay.
When you think about a retail location, the way that businesses and retailers select those sites is based on traffic, visibility, the density, all those kind of factors. And, you know, when you've got a retailer in a great spot, you know, that is going to go quickly and that has high value. So what's happening now is as leases are coming due, you know, whether it's a 3-year, 5-year, 10-year lease for, you know, a retailer, a restaurant, they're going back to the ownership, renegotiating that lease. And sometimes they're trying to say, hey, can we lower this price? And the owner is saying, well, no. I mean, this is an owner's market right now because most of it has to do with the cost of construction if that retailer were to move. The cost of construction right now is at unprecedented high levels, not only the cost of construction for a build out or new construction, but the ability to get materials. They're saying that doors, like a door for an office or a retail facility is like 20 weeks out.
Oh, 30 wow.
weeks. I mean, it's insane. How can you have, you can't have a building without a door. And so there's this like underground market, and we can talk about that at another time. An underground door market, and then electrical boxes and all that kind of fun stuff.
We don't talk about it.
You blew my door side gig, Tracy.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about that, Jane. But also when you think about retail, I know we were talking about Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
You know,
closing.
You can still
use your coupons though at the Container Store. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, wow.
Container Store and Big Lots are still accepting Bed Bath & Beyond
Pro
coupons.
Tip. Oh, yeah. Wow, I learned something today. We're done here. But those spaces are very valuable, not only because they're in high traffic areas, you know, but they're great for a Dollar Tree or you name the big box retailer that's looking to move into town. You see a lot of expansion with, you know, the TJ Maxx's and the Marshalls and all of, you know, those types of stores that continue to expand in this market. And, you know, they're waiting in the wings for those Bed Bath & Beyond folks to get the heck out. And retail also, think about the restaurants, the turnover of restaurants. Yeah. You know, they turn over quickly because that is, it's a tough business model. Yeah. And so you see a lot of volatility and you see a lot of, you know, ins and outs there, and you're going to continue to see that. But at the end of the day, retail is very strong, and especially strip malls we had talked about, because of all the different uses that retailers can envision for those high traffic areas, whether it's a nail salon or a medical facility. There's this new term in retail called medtail. So being able to access your medical provider, whether it's imaging or your eye doctor, in some of these strip malls rather than in a, you know, a healthcare facility.
Oh, that's super interesting.
So there's a huge market for that, and you're seeing a lot of that. And especially as you talk about co-tenancy and the retailers and the medical facilities and the, you know, healthcare facilities, skin personal care facilities that are all kind of in that, in one area, trying to leverage the traffic and audience.
Absolutely. So then I guess the last thing, you're a busy lady. And so you've also been involved with the ongoing discussions, debate as far as the I-94 expansion.
Oh, yes.
And that you just told me at the break that there's also an update there, which we haven't talked about that in a while. I did not realize that there was a hearing coming up.
Well, this is an ongoing discussion, I-94 east-west. And you've probably, this has been going on since I started at the commercial realtors, which was 9 years ago. I started 9 years ago, and we were talking about I-94 east-west. And this is the five-mile corridor that goes along the
We drive it every day now. Well,
yes.
You take Blue Mound. I drive it every day.
Between the Market Interchange and the Zoo Interchange, which are billion-dollar investments. And here we can't kind of talk ourselves out of this paper bag here on investing in a modernization of this corridor. And so we've got to spend the money to upgrade it. I mean, it's useful life has come and gone. And so we can't decide whether we're going to do 6 lanes, which it is now, or we're going to do 8 lanes, which has been the preferred alternative through the DOT and through the different listening sessions. And last time I checked, things aren't getting less expensive as time goes on.
Yeah.
But the time delay just continues to add cost to the project. And so we've been advocating to joint finance and the legislature to spend the $140 million to keep this project on track so we don't have to stop with the engineering and all of the studies, and just let's move forward. And so, you know, usually in real estate, we say that time kills deals.
I think it's most sales.
In most sales, yes. But I actually think that slowing down has actually made this deal better.
Oh, interesting.
But now we need to move forward.
Okay. And that's separate from the budget.
There is a budget. There is money in the budget for the continuation of I-94 East-West. Yes. $140 million.
All right. Well, we've left a lot of things open to have you come back between updates with the Brewers and how we're going to fund that stadium, what's going to happen with I-94, ongoing stuff with commercial real estate. But this was so fun to have you on, Tracy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Congratulations. Yeah. It's a great show.
Oh, thank you. And then, it's always fun to have you out here. And so thank you for coming downtown and coming in person.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be back after the top of the hour news. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.